Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
17-17 tie. 4:24 to go in the game. Mahomes calls an audible and backs up behind Creed Humphrey. Here comes a blitz. Quick pass is cut. This side. Touchdown! Kansas City! DeAndre Hopkins on the quick left side slant. The second time D-Hop has tasted the sweet nectar of the Chiefs Kingdom end zone. And the Chiefs lead 23-17. Mike Caliendo comes in as an extra blocker. This is third down and one. At the two-yard line, a touchdown, walks it off, handoff, Kareem Hunt, right side, powering, he is, give it to him, touchdown, Kansas City, it's a walk-off touchdown by Kareem Hunt, and the Kansas City Chiefs stay undefeated at 8-0, the only unbeaten team in the National Football League, 14 straight wins for the Chiefs Kingdom. That's an all-time Kansas City record and seventh in National Football League history. 8-0, a 10-play, 70-yard drive for a touchdown. Tampa Bay never touched it in OT. 4:08 was on the clock when Kareem Hunt dragged Tampa Bay defenders into the sweet nectar of the end zone. And the Kansas City Chiefs set a team record tonight and stay undefeated.
Yeah, there it is. Led, as we all predicted back in August, by Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins. The Chiefs get it done on Monday Night Football. Just continue to find ways to win these games. Certainly not the best defensive performance they've had all year, but they get it done anyway, Tommy. 30-24 winners. Welcome into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester here. Jad Chambers producing. We have a jam-packed show for you today. Lots of things to get to. Not only did we have the Chiefs on Monday Night Football, we had Wichita State open its season on the road with a win. We had Kansas open at home with a win. And we've got K-State football, or K-State basketball, I should say, going tonight. So it is a jam-packed show. The IHOP hotline is open for you to react to any of it. That's 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP House faves. All your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Glad to be here with you, Tommy. That was a busier Monday night than I expected. How are you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, going from Monday Night Football to Shocker basketball in their opener to KU, their opener at home last night. It was a lot of bouncing back and forth between multiple games last night, but it's fun. Like, this is the best time of the year, you know, now through the probably March Madness. I mean, we're obviously in the thick of it now with college basketball tipping off and full swing in the NFL. College football is getting down to the wire too. We get our CFP top 12 rankings today. So, I mean, there's no rest for the wicked, and it continues today for sure. So I'm excited to get into it.
And there's something else going on around the country today.
There is.
Let's all behave. Let's all be nice. And let's all be here tomorrow when the sun rises and everything's going to be just fine.
And let's all get out there and actually vote today. You know, like the worst thing you can do is sit at home and not do anything. So if you haven't voted already today, I haven't done it. I got to go today. I might have to wait in a line. I'm not really sure, but I got to get that taken care of today.
I am typically an early voter, and this is as crowded as I've seen, which is interesting, and we'll have all that coverage tonight. Oh, man, I don't know that election nights are fun, but they're also a lot. And if I knew people would be nicer to each other, I'd probably enjoy them a whole lot more. But I am excited that we are almost through with it. Because I'm to the point in my life where I'm over it, right? I'm over how mean everybody is to each other and how much these people try to make everybody hate each other. So I'm glad for that to be done. But here we go. Sun will be up tomorrow. We'll be right here with a Sports Daily show for you either way. We've got Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, coming up at 10 o'clock to go back into Monday Night Football and look ahead to this week as well. It's a short week, of course, which is always a little bit dangerous in the NFL, but we can get into all that with Dan. Let's go to last night, Tommy, and we'll start there. We'll get to some college hoops as we make our way through this hour as well. So that was impressive. I didn't like 9 points. Nobody ever liked 9 points. I certainly didn't expect And it was a little strange. You know, Tampa didn't move the ball like crazy, Tommy, but they did score a lot of points and they took advantage. It felt like the Chiefs could have had about 45 points in that game. They early in the game, definitely, you know, you had the Kelce fumble. I don't even remember what happened on the opening drive where they could, it was a penalty. No, it was that big. It was that Mahomes sack. They should have had it. Oh, it was the Worthy. The Worthy should have had the touchdown. He just lost his place on the field. I mean, get into him at some point too, but they still get to 30 points. And I know they got to overtime, but that was as good, I thought, as we've seen the offense all year long.
It was, and it was really the opportunity for DeAndre Hopkins to show out. And I mentioned it with Paul on the show yesterday that I was going to be all over DeAndre Hopkins player props on his receptions, on his receiving yards, on his anytime touchdowns. I felt like his first home game as a Chief inside Arrowhead in primetime, you know, you got a former first team All-Pro. I mean, just the guy has had more receiving yards than anybody in the last decade plus in the NFL. And he actually had an opportunity with a longer week between games to be able to get that much more acclimated to the offense. I just felt like it was going to be a coming out party. And what's interesting, and you mentioned Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins at the top. And it's funny because the last time the Chiefs played Monday Night Football, that was the first home game back in Arrowhead for Kareem Hunt. And he went off in that game against the Saints. So for me, it was just kind of like both scenarios, both games was an opportunity for the new guys. And in the case of Kareem Hunt, the old new guy or the new old guy to really be able to show out in front of the home crowd. And DeAndre Hopkins was able to do that. You saw pretty much in real time. It felt like that trust factor with Mahomes and Hopkins just blossom. And I texted you during the game, the catch that Hopkins made, the first touchdown that he made, that catch, that was a catch that I don't care who the receiver was on the Chiefs roster over the last 3 years. No other receiver was making that catch. And DeAndre Hopkins, that's why you bring him in. That's why you trade for him. Even though he's over the age of 30, even though you know he's injury prone, whatever, all the different things, that right there is why you bring DeAndre Hopkins to Kansas City.
I thought was really interesting in this game. A, Travis Kelce had 16, yeah. 16 targets. That's interesting. But what I thought I saw from Hopkins, yes, the big play, and that is sort of an element they haven't had in a really long time. But even if you took that play away, took it out, I thought you saw Hopkins play the role of Juju Smith-Schuster of 2 years ago, Rashee Rice of last year. Mahomes just is going to throw him the ball when they need a big play. The one difference, though, to me is the velocity at which Mahomes was firing it in there to Hopkins seemed at another level, maybe. And I don't know if that has anything to do with him. I don't know if that has anything to do with specific routes, but it did look like he was more comfortable just, you know, firing missiles at Hopkins because he knew he would come down with them, and he did. But that role is filled and some. And I think that's what matters, right? Like the things they needed Rashee Rice to do, we saw that last night. Like that was that role. And we know how much better this offense is with that role filled that way. So I think you take that away. And man, Kareem Hunt, I didn't see this coming with him, but he looks good. He's exactly what the team needs. I think when Pacheco comes back, they work together really well, but he's just been steady Eddie and one of the biggest reasons they're unbeaten right now.
Yeah. And look, I think that also with the way that offense has sort of, you know, just come together over the last few weeks or so. Yeah. You've got DeAndre Hopkins now providing that role that you mentioned. They really had wanted Rashee Rice to do this season. And Hopkins can do a whole lot of different things also and kind of play multiple different roles. But I thought what was interesting was this was the first time I felt like this season offensively, Patrick Mahomes wanted to really stay in the pocket and let plays develop downfield. Now he did take some sacks, and that's what's going to happen when you've got Vita Vea, you know, playing for the Buccaneers, and he's a menace, he's a problem. And I don't think the offensive line, at least early on in the game, played particularly well overall. I mean, Wanya Morris, left tackle, continues to be just an absolute liability for Kansas City. But even the interior line to start the game didn't play great. It's hard to go up against a guy like Vita Vea. They did lock down more in the second half. But I thought the sacks on Mahomes, in my opinion, were a direct result of Mahomes feeling more comfortable staying in the pocket and not feeling like he had to improvise and create something out of nothing. He wanted to see plays develop downfield, and that's the difference of having a DeAndre Hopkins on your roster, because the improvisation doesn't necessarily have to be with Mahomes in the backfield. The improvisation can be with Mahomes staying in the pocket if he's got the protection and letting Hopkins go and improvise downfield and knowing that, you know, Mahomes can find him. And that's a piece of the passing game that just hasn't been there really at any level over the last couple of years. And that's not a knock on guys like Rashee Rice and, you know, others that are on the team. They're very talented. But Hopkins has been doing this for long enough in the league that his reputation is he can go and even if a play breaks down or a route is busted or whatever it is, he can go try to make something happen. And when he's got a quarterback like Mahomes, they can just find him and throw the ball up and know Hopkins is going to go get it. That's going to allow Patrick Mahomes, if he has the protection, to be able to stay in the pocket and not have to move around a ton.
Yeah, it does. The passing game can be quick, like we saw. How many shots did we see? We saw the one that was just missed to Watson. We saw Worthy's goof. That's 2, 3. Hopkins got his. At least 3. And there may have been another I'm forgetting about. So we did see deep shots in
this
game. And
don't you think also that since, you know, you've got now the threat downfield in Hopkins, that, I mean, that's a direct result of that is Travis Kelce having the number of catches that he had. I mean, that you can't, it's really difficult for defenses to be able to, you know, to cover both of them. And I think that, you know, as great as Travis Kelce is, that we all know, and it's pretty clear when you watch him, that while he is going to be, you know, the ball hog in that regard and still get his yards and be super effective, some of the things that Kelce has done over his career, maybe he shouldn't be doing quite as much of anymore, like trying to juke and get extra yards and things like that, because he's fumbling more at a higher clip than he had in the past. So I'd like to see that, you know, sort of refined and worked on a little bit more. But I mean, it doesn't take away from his overall greatness and the fact that, you know, he gets to be a direct beneficiary of the fact that now you've got a talent like DeAndre Hopkins on the field.
Yeah. I mean, over his last 5 games, Kelce's had at least 9 targets in 4 of them. So he's clearly, they're ready to open him up into the offense more. And that's great, because the more of that he does, the more you can maybe push Hopkins down the field on a lot of plays. You know, Worthy, we might as well just get, Worthy has been, I think, disappointing so far. I think that's fair. Now, that doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean he's not going to get better. I think he will. I think they, you know, the difference between Worthy and when we were beginning to say like Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney were disappointing, I think are miles and miles and miles apart from each other. But like, you got to know where you are on that play if you're Worthy.
See,
you can't run out of bounds. You can't. I think he needs, we're to the point now with Worthy, and I think he will, by the way. I think he's going to be pretty good, but we're to the point of the season where mistakes like that, you can't make those mistakes, because they really haven't, like, he's had the busted coverage early in the year. And I think Aikman brought this up last night. Other than the busted coverage play early in the year, and last night was a busted coverage play that he didn't convert on, Worthy supposed to help them take shots? And I just don't think he's doing that right now. And I don't know why that is. You know, I don't know what the reason for that is, but it doesn't matter as much if Hopkins can do that, right? Like, it's okay. So if Worthy's not doing it, if Hopkins adds the element of what they thought, you know, Worthy would be able to get them. Now he's been thrust into a larger role faster than, you know, than they had liked. But if Hopkins gives you that, that doesn't really matter whether Worthy is coming along quickly or slowly, because
yeah,
Hopkins can give it to you.
I'm not ready yet to say that he's a disappointment. I don't think that he is. I mean, I think that he's been,
I'm not saying he's a disappointment. I'm saying he's been disappointing.
I don't think but I don't even think he's been disappointing. I mean, I think he's a rookie, and I think that, you know, he's been thrust into a role that, you know, he hasn't had an opportunity to grow into yet. And I think that that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment, because if you look at what the Chiefs' plans were for Xavier Worthy to start this season, going all the way back to training camp, the plans were to also have Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice and then Travis Kelce, obviously. So I think that they wanted to utilize Xavier Worthy and develop him in the same way that they did Rashee Rice a season ago, where he came along slowly and he wasn't much of an impact player early on in the season. And then you get to the second half of the year and into the playoffs and all of that, and all of a sudden you're like, all right, Rashee Rice, he's arrived. He's on the scene now. That's what I think what they ideally wanted to do with Xavier Worthy. That hasn't happened. I mean, before they went and traded for DeAndre Hopkins, Juju Smith-Schuster was out. Hollywood Brown was out. Rashee Rice was out. Xavier Worthy was their wide receiver one as a rookie. That's not the way that they wanted to utilize him in his rookie season. So I'm not willing to say that he's been disappointing. I think he's been a rookie. And I think that now having an all-pro in DeAndre Hopkins alongside you and Travis Kelce can help take that pressure off. I'm perfectly fine with the role that Xavier Worthy is playing and the way that he's been able to perform. You're muted, Jacob.
I didn't even mute myself that time. I'm not down on Worthy, but I do think it's fair. Look, he's 10th right now among rookie receivers in yards. And he's been presented an opportunity where the team's top, you know, three, at least two or three, if you count Hollywood Brown's, pass catchers are down. So I think he's had a chance to take off in the offense, and he hasn't done that yet. And so when you see an opportunity blown like it was last night, I think that is disappointing. And I think he'll be fine big picture. But like, if you just go down the list, I mean, he's getting targets. He's just not converting on them hardly at all. He hasn't missed games, and his production just hasn't been very high in an offense where he would have had an opportunity. Now, again, it doesn't matter because they went out and they got Hopkins, and Hopkins it looks incredible. I mean, Hopkins looks just unbelievably good, and they're 8-0, so it's not that big a deal, but I do think we can look at it, and I think we can look at him and at least for me, like, I think there should be more there for him so far based on the role that has been available to him and some of the plays he hasn't been able to convert on. Like, that play last night, that you can't do that.
Yeah, but like, I also think, and sure, like, you'd love to have that one back. Worthy would love to have that one back. There's no doubt about that. Should have been a walk-in touchdown. It wasn't. Does he make that play a year from now? Probably. I think that that's just the reality of where he is in his development. And sure, he's 10th overall in rookies and yardage and all of that. And you can compare him to other rookies in the draft class and where they're at. Like, I know that Rome Odunze has exploded for the Bears, and you've got Marvin Harrison and like some of these other rookie wide receivers. I think that the Chiefs felt like they, you know, when they went and got Xavier Worthy and they drafted him, that he could be somebody that didn't necessarily have to be thrust into the premier role. And I like where he is now with the players around him and surrounding him. If you were going to trot out a wide receiver core that was led by Xavier Worthy in his rookie season with guys like Justin Watson and Mecole Hardman below him on the depth chart, I wouldn't like that for, number one, the Chiefs offense, but also Worthy specifically. That puts a whole heap a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But then you get to have an all-pro in DeAndre Hopkins with you, and I think that does alleviate some of that for sure, and I think we'll continue to see that. And I think that also, you also have to take into consideration when before the Chiefs go out and get DeAndre Hopkins, the identity of the team really wasn't to air the ball out because they just didn't have the personnel to be able to do that. And defenses,
that's why he's there.
But not by himself, not to be the one guy to do that, because defenses know that too. If you don't have DeAndre Hopkins on the field, then they can absolutely clamp down on Xavier Worthy as a rookie and get him off of his game. And then all of a sudden the Chiefs have nothing in the passing game. So like that really hadn't been, that wasn't their identity. And we talked about that at length, that it was going to be run the ball a ton. And you know, that was really going to be the way that they were going to be successful. They did that with Kareem Hunt last night. Now, Hunt wasn't fully efficient early on in the game. There wasn't a lot of opportunities for him. I felt like the Chiefs abandoned the run when they shouldn't. Kind of middle of the game after halftime, they got back to it in the fourth quarter, and that's when they were able to get back into the game, and that's when Kareem Hunt finished with over 100 yards on the ground or whatever.
Mahomes said that in his on field.
So that was huge.
After game,
I mean, they don't win that game unless they get back to the running game, and Kareem Hunt is able to find those holes and really be able to convert on first down. That's why they got back in the game.
Well, I want to get Dan's take on Worthy. And I don't, this doesn't need to be a Worthy conversation. The Chiefs are 8-0 and they're fine. But he's got two catches over 20 yards this year, like this entire season. He hasn't missed a game.
He's a
right?
rookie.
8 games.
He's fine. He's fine.
There's 9 other rookies who are performing better than him, and he's a first-round pick.
He's perfectly fine. I feel like it's unfortunate that after a game in this regard and the Chiefs are 8-0, that's the conversation that we're having as critical of Xavier Worthy. Like, that to me, that's like, I don't know, a dozen places down in the priority chart of things to discuss in this show.
It was about the fifth or sixth game thing we got to in the game, and it only came up because we were talking about those deep shots.
He's perfectly fine.
Yeah, he is, because the Chiefs are 8-0, and they just keep finding ways to win these games, and it's been pretty wild to watch, and here they go. You know, it's just one thing after the other. They got it right. There's been a lot of trading this morning that maybe we'll get to today. If not, we'll let the dust settle.
By the way, speaking of trades, really quick, Dan Graziano from ESPN is reporting that the Chiefs are inquiring about cornerbacks all around the NFL. So they're probably not done. If they can make it work financially, they may be making a move for somebody in the secondary.
Yeah, it was, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I continue to say, push your chips in this year. Go for it. You've got history. All different things happening. We'll get to Dan Israel on that at the top of the hour. He joins us, our Chiefs insider. We're going to talk some college hoops next. We've got to get through the Shockers game. We got to get through the KU game. It's a jam-packed Tuesday. Happy Election Day, everybody. It is all Brockton Castor. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here at KFH and all the Odyssey studios. We'll be back with more Sports Daily right after this.
And 1240.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We're glad to be here with you. KFH, the radio home of K-State Sports. Check it out tonight, 6 o'clock, Wildcat Basketball hosting New Orleans. Tune in to 97.5, 1240 KFH at 6, or download the free Odyssey app. Search for KFH at game time. Welcome back in to Sports Daily, everybody. Jake Walbrock, Tommy Castor here. The IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. You can also leave us your video comments on Facebook, on YouTube, and on X, where we are glad to have you. Tommy, big night of college basketball last night. That was unkind of all the different things we were trying to keep up with all at the same time. But boy, it is nice to have college hoops back. And it just, it feels a lot like the unknown in a lot of ways. And we'll start with Wichita State here, and we'll get to K-State or KU in just a little bit. But I mean, look, I don't know how much of the Shocker game. We love the outcome, right? Love the outcome. Fantastic outcome. Fantastic debut, obviously, for Justin Hill. Incredible. I don't know how much to lean into. You know, 11 made threes in the game. Last week, Paul Mills told us he didn't think they'd be like a great three-point shooting team, but he thought they'd be better than they were a year ago. That obviously led the way for the Shockers offensively. We certainly need to see him be better defensively. They cleaned up the turnovers in the second half, but at the end of the day, what did they win last year on the road? 2 games? And they opened the year with a win over a nice opponent there in Western Kentucky. Great way to start the year for the Shockers.
It 100% was, because Western Kentucky, you know, they're not a slouch team. You know, they're just not. And so being able to hang with them on the road to kick off the season, and keep in mind, this is something that Paul and I talked about yesterday. It's by and large a brand new team. Now, obviously, you've got returners and Quincy Ballard and Harlan Beverly, Bijan Cortez, Ronnie DeGray, Xavier Bell. Like, you've got some of those pieces returning. But by and large, I mean, the newcomers, I think, are set and primed, and Justin Hill showed this last night, to make a major impact, to be major impact players on this Shocker roster. And so this was the first real opportunity to be able to see all that come together outside of an exhibition game against Emporia State. And it wasn't like a cupcake game inside Koch Arena to start off the season. I mean, Paul Mills challenged his guys on the road in Bowling Green to start off the season. And that's something that I'm really impressed by. I admire that. I admire the fact that that was the very first game of the year out of the gate to get this team tested. And, you know, I thought Taylor Eldridge had a really good article before the game. I believe it came out over the weekend, or maybe it came out yesterday, talking about how the newcomers on this team, Paul Mills prioritized those guys having NCAA tournament experience. And that was something that was really important to him in bringing these players over. We asked Coach Mills about that a couple of different times in his conversations with us during the offseason and how that matters and that culture and building that in the locker room and things like that. You get there by starting off your season playing games like that on the road to kick off the season in a hostile environment, taking on a Western Kentucky team that at one point held a 6 or 8 point lead in the first half, and it was a battle back and forth. And so I'm extremely impressed by that victory. That's a gritty win, you know, led by Justin Hill being able to do what he did. I'm sure that there are things they want to clean up, especially defensively, to your point. But all in all, I'm extremely impressed by the way they started this season.
Yeah, look, I don't – in that game this year, when we don't think there are going to be tons and tons of opportunities for, you know, resume-building wins, you take that one however you can get it. That's a road win. Now we hope Western Kentucky has a really nice year, and that becomes one of the signature wins of the Shockers season to put on the resume, right? Like, so bottom line at the end of the day, that's all anybody cares about. I think for me, it's like, I don't know, like identity wise for this team, I don't know how much of this is like long-term identity type stuff. I don't know. Is Justin Hill that kind of scorer? He flashed like that at Georgia, right? Like he had some games. I think his high there was 21 points. So that part's not that surprising. Things that, you know, have been kicked around to is Xavier Bell's looked good in the preseason. He looked good last night. They need that because Bijan Cortez can't have four turnovers, right? Like you can't in 24 minutes. That can't happen. So they need the ability to switch that up if it's not going right. I thought early as I'm watching it, I'm like, okay, this looks too sloppy, right? Like I think, but it was kind of going both ways and they eventually got that figured out. I think it was, 10 turnovers in the first half and 4 in the second half, I think. So
they got that cleaned up. And I want to go back to what you mentioned about Western Kentucky, you know, maybe that being a signature win for the Shockers. Keep in mind, Western Kentucky made the NCAA tournament a season ago. They were Conference USA champions, and they return a majority of their production from a season ago. And I didn't know this, you know, until I was looking it up this morning and recapping the game. I didn't realize that the Hilltoppers have like the second oldest roster in the country. It's a very experienced squad. And in their home environment, I mean, just watching the game, like you could tell that place was juiced, right? Like there, it's the first opportunity for the Western Kentucky fan base to see the team that went to the NCAA tournament a season ago and to celebrate them and all of that. And so that had, it had all the makings of Wichita State coming into that environment and being rattled because it's really the first time that we've seen this collection of the returners and the newcomers coming together and playing in a game. This was not an easy cakewalk by any means. And I thought that what Justin Hill did the best was just being able to take the game over. And that was something that the Shockers missed big time a season ago. Like they desperately needed that a year ago because they would get, at times, they would just get lost. Like they would disappear for stretches of a game offensively. And you'd be like, well, where is the bucket going to come from? If the Shockers need to stem a tide or stop a run by the other team, or they need to, you know, put it on the back of somebody, who are they going to go to? I don't really feel like they had that person, that go-to guy a season ago. If it can be Justin Hill, fantastic. I mean, through one game, it's hard to tell if that's going to be the way it is every single game. But man, it certainly was impressive what he was able to do.
Yeah, the 9 from 11 from the free throw line to me was the most important for what you're talking about. You have to have somebody just create when it's not there, right? And the Shockers missed too many free throws late in the game. That's another thing you kind of want to just toss to the side and not worry too much about. But I'm telling you right now, if the Shockers shoot 40% from three, they're going to win a ton of games this year. That's the big one for me. I don't know how realistic that is. Credit to them for firing away in the first half, especially when they were just absolutely feeling it, right? And just keep going, right? Heat check time. That will be the biggest difference, I think, in what we've seen out of Shocker basketball. But yeah, if a guy like Hill can get to the free throw line that way, that sort of cures what ails you when you're struggling, right? If you can get, it's what, I think back to some of the great Shocker, I think back to Fred VanVleet. Like what did the Shockers do when they needed something to snap out? Fred would drive in and just get hammered down low, and he didn't get nearly enough fouls called on him as he should have. He should have been shooting 10 free throws a game. But that's a way to get your offense back on track. Like when you're slumping in a game and it's inevitable, if you can get to the free throw line, you can hang in there until you get through that slump. So I thought, to me, that was as good as anything. You know, Mate is, and his eligibility was good. Bochniak, I thought he looked, he's not there yet. I'll just say that. I thought he was, he needs some time. And of course, you know, you come in internationally, and that's what you're going to have to do, but at least they have his size.
I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be fine.
Well, I don't know yet.
No, but I think
I'm
he will
really,
be.
I mean, really glad they have him there. I think they he need will the backup. Be. We saw Ballard pick up two fouls. They got to have him, right? They got to have somebody down there.
I think Mate will be, and I think that, you know, you're coming off of a situation where he's cleared 48 hours before the game, and that's got to be, you know, difficult prior to that mentally for both Mate and Paul Mills. Like, are we going to have him or not? And how does he fit into our game plan? And then all of a sudden, 48 hours later, he's on the court. And so I think he'll be fine. He's competed against your really high level competition overseas. I think he'll be okay. The other thing to keep in mind too is that Paul and I discussed this yesterday on the show. There's been a history of these decisions not going Wichita State's way in recent years with Colby Rogers and Teddy Allen. Like those decisions have not gone the Shockers' way. And so it could be really easy to have kind of a glass half empty or defeatist mentality. Like, oh, he's probably not going to get cleared. You and I talked about that. Like, yeah, more than likely, he's probably not going to play just because we know the way that the NCAA operates. And so it's a pleasant surprise. But then you also have to very quickly, like, push all of that out of the way and be like, well, let's get ready to play. So I think he'll be okay. I'm not concerned at all about what
I'm
saw from
concerned.
Him
one. I'm glad he's there because Ballard picks up the two quick fouls, which is possible for him, and they need somebody else to put in there. And so that I think is good. He's a gifted passer too, by the way. I thought that was the best part of his game last night was his, which shouldn't surprise us, right? All the Croatian stars in the NBA and the way they can pass. But it was a great, great start for the Shockers. They come home for the home opener against Montana State. That's Saturday evening. Certainly excited about that. I want to know, can this team shoot that way? If this team shoots that way, and again, I don't think that should be the expectation because I don't think it's Paul Mills' expectation. But hey, why not, right? We there's some new guys in here letting it rip. And I have heard that Bell has, you know, really taken another step this offseason. So we'll see. But that's Saturday. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. KU played last night. Certainly a game where it was never in question of whether they were going to win against Howard. But I think there's a lot of positives to take out of KU's opener as well. We'll do that next. It's all Brockton Caster at Sports Daily. Dan Israel joining us top of the hour. Don't go away.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back. I want to quickly tell you about Pepin Suter Remodeling. If you have any home projects that you need to get done, they did our kitchen remodel. And it was fantastic. It was the lowest bid. The quality of it has been fantastic. Any follow-up questions, I send them a message about some of the stuff all the time. And they come back, they check on it, they make sure everything's good. You can give Pepin a call, 316-573-6822. You can check them out online, check out all their great work. Just a really nice experience. So if you have any home remodeling need, can't recommend Pep and Suter Remodeling enough. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. You know, Tommy, you text me just during the break about my cough, and I'm sure people catch it. I'm surprised I made it back from vacation. Apparently, this cough is very inconvenient for my wife. I think she's going to kill me at some point, whether it's, you know, on...
There it is right there.
On an airplane. So here's what happens. If I take a deep breath, this has been since COVID too, the first time I had it, that the long cough, this has to be what this is. If I take a deep breath, it catches. Now, I had some junk earlier in the cough, and I've never felt bad. Like, none of this has ever felt bad. I'm to this point now, and this happens every time, and it'll last me a long time. Like, it lasts like a month. If I take a deep breath, it catches and I lose it. And it's miserable trying to be on air doing this, by the way. Like, I at least have a mute button here, but on TV, I don't have that quite as simply. Like, I can reach back and mute my microphone pack, but like, I've got to do Election Day cut-ins and coverage tonight. And I'm like, God, this is so annoying. Like, I know it annoys everybody else. I promise it annoys me just as much.
What's funny is that, you know, you mentioned your wife's reaction to it, and like, that's marriage, right? Like, your spouse is annoyed when you're sick. Like, they're inconvenienced more than you are, and you're the one that feels terrible. Like, that's kind of the way that it works. And when I texted you, I was like, you probably got to go to a doctor, because that's what my wife gets mad at me about, is she's like angry at me that I don't go to the doctor to get things checked out. And like, you know, or I really, what it comes down to is like, I won't take medicine. And I will, but she'll be like, I told you you needed to take something. Why aren't you taking anything? I'm like, I haven't yet. You know, so
the only times I've heard, have you taken something for that? And I'm like, it doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Like, I know what's happening. There's nothing I can do. Like, it's going to take a long, annoying, damn time. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Jad and I were talking about it during the break that on Friday, I was concerned that you and I were going to be able to get through the show, because I felt bad. Like, I did not feel good. I was coughing on Friday. You were coughing on Friday. I felt like we were muting microphones back and forth. And I told Jad at the time, 9 times out of 10, yours is a long cough. When I get sick, I lose my voice. 9 times out of 10, it just goes away. It'll be gone for days at a time. And I'm like, I'm going to come back on Monday, have to host the show and have no voice. Fortunately, that didn't happen. It was the one time it didn't happen. But man, you and I were not in good shape on Friday.
I haven't even felt bad. Like, I don't even feel bad. I've never felt bad with this cough. It's literally just been a cough. It's so annoying.
Better
so,
go to the doctor. Apologies. Gotta get that checking out.
We get for what? Like, I know what it is. It's take time, right? Maybe there's a steroid or something I can take. I don't know. KU, real quick, and we'll get more into this a little more in depth in the second hour, as well as look at a little bit to K-State tonight. Look, I think that was exactly what you want to see. It's a tune-up game, essentially. They've had 3 tune-up games before North Carolina. I think that's what you're looking at. It's the first official one. I'll tell you, for me, the thing that has me sort of like perking up an eyebrow and almost everybody else, it's Flory Badunga and what he looks like right now for this team. And I know he's young, but man, like, he is developing quickly, let's say, because that dude can play. We knew what kind of athlete he was. We'd heard those stories, but it is translating, and it is translating quickly.
That was big for me. I think that obviously Flory Badunga, but also what the transfer Zeke Mayo and Diggy Coit did. And you've got guard play now outside of DeJuan Harris that is effective offensively while also not turning the ball over a ton on the defensive end of the floor. So I think that all of that combined is massive. And then just the overall depth of this Jayhawks team.
It's crazy.
They didn't have that a year ago. And this is like a calling card of Bill Self. A season occurs where there is a deficiency, or in the case of last season, multiple deficiencies, and he locks in and goes all in on remedying that in future years. And like, that's what he did during this offseason. It was like clear as day that there was not the depth necessary in this team a year ago to be successful. Right. And now they are probably the most deep team that Bill Self has had.
I would think so.
Right? Like, and so it's just a night and day difference. And again, Howard is not, you know, world beaters by any means, but that was a good look at what this team could be at its ceiling. It obviously is going to get a whole lot tougher when they play North Carolina, but that was as good of a debut, I think, for newcomers in a Jayhawks uniform overall, whether you're talking about Badunga or the transfers, that I think we've seen in some time.
It's, and I think we did get a look at what things will look like most of the time. So, like, I expected Zeke Mayo to come in and be a jolt offensively, right? We expect Rylan Griffin to be a crazy athlete, but it lets KJ, the way this is constructed, and maybe Coit's probably the biggest surprise, but Adams can now do what Adams does, and Harris can now do what Harris does, and these guys can just be the best versions of themselves and not try to be too much. The thing, what I mean with Badunga is, I would tell you that going into the year, I didn't expect his leap to happen like,
yeah,
it looks like he's like ready to roll right now. I didn't see that development happen that quickly, I guess, and as things I was looking at this year.
And by the way, we spent that entire time talking about the Jayhawks and didn't mention Hunter Dickinson. Hunter Dickinson is a place for the team,
yeah,
right?
I mean, he's, like, he's dead
if that supporting cast around him can be so effective like we saw in game number one, keep your eyes on Dickinson winning the Naismith this year, because he wouldn't necessarily have to have all the pressure on his shoulders, and he can do what he does. The guy stepped out and hit a three in the game, which that was few and far between a season ago. He looked that much more comfortable because he had a supporting cast that was dynamic around him.
Yeah, I mean, they shot the three well. That was, I mean, it was exactly, we'll get more into it in the second hour and like project it out. And of course, the game against North Carolina. When we come back, Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, joins the program. Looking forward to that conversation. We'll get into last night. We'll look into a Broncos game on a short week. All the good stuff with Dan. That's coming up next. Stick with us. We'll give away some HTO as well in the second hour. Lot to get to, lot to cover on a Reaction Tuesday full of Monday Night Football, college basketball talk. IHOP Hotline will be open after Dan, 869-1240. Don't go away. We're coming right back. More Sports Daily right after this.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most listened to sports radio. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Kaster, Dan Israel joining us on the program. Dan, it is 8-0. It is overtime. It is all of these things, but it is, I think, the Chiefs offense finding the best version of itself, and I think we can probably give a tip of the cap to DeAndre Hopkins for that. Boy, he is integrating.
The real deal.
He's integrating quickly. I think Danny's allowing Mahomes. Mahomes seemed like he was putting a little mustard on the ball last night, like we haven't seen him in a while. I think it looks like there's a trust factor there that he knows he can make those kinds of throws and Hopkins will go catch it.
Yeah, already, you know, the big play, the long play down the middle was a busted play. Hopkins ran the wrong route. Mahomes saw him take off and threw the ball. And he said when he threw the ball, he realized there were three defenders and only one of his guy, that it probably was going to end up as a bad situation. But we watched Hopkins just effortlessly take the ball from the sky. I mean, it was truly a contested catch. He had three guys around him, and yet somehow just made it seem effortless. Watching him, and look, I know we make a big deal about all how the size of his hands, and they're like suction cups. That's why this guy's had 12 years in the league, and it's man, it's fun to watch. I mean, the possibilities suddenly become almost endless.
Are we okay with Travis Kelce 16 targets? That feels a little too much to me. But he's, you know, he's had at least nine, I think, in five out of the last 6 weeks, something like that. Like, and I know they wanted to slow ramp him up. They've talked about it at length. He's talked about it. Is it too early for that? Or are we okay with that sort of target load for Kelce?
Well, I guess you need to define we, because I know Kelce was calling for the ball at the end of the game. He wanted more. But right. Yeah, career high, career record number. That's an awful lot of touches. I think, you know, it's just going to be a game by game deal. I don't think you want to put that many miles on him every trip. But man, it's fun to see these guys kind of come together and the possibilities of what they could do. I feel like they're helping each other. You know, I mean, we said it. Would Hopkins be a deterrent for defenses to say, hey, we can't just cover Kelce? And I think the answer to that is yes.
Yeah, and if you took away the deep ball, if you took away that bust, what we talked about there at the beginning, Hopkins looked to me like he was playing the role we saw Juju Smith-Schuster play 2 years ago and Rashi Rice play so well last year. Like, it looked the same to me. Third down, yeah. We saw how good Mahomes was on third down, but quick patterns, things to get the ball in his hand, let him make some moves and things after the fact. That's what it looked like to me. It looked like he is playing that role for the team right now.
Yeah, you know, and Worthy's got more to improve on here before he really comes into the mix. But I think when you see Juju Smith-Schuster come back and you've got Hopkins, now you've got three guys there that can all run. In particular, against Tampa Bay, they were a little bit soft in the middle. And so it really, I thought, from a game plan standpoint, they were able to take advantage of Kelce and D-Hop. But I think, you know, as we go down the road here through the month of November into December and into the playoffs and start getting guys back, you can kind of see how they're going to use these guys. And boy, I'll tell you know, 1 week D Hopkins has been a Chief, one full week as a Chief, and he seemed like he was right in there. And I know he said that Mahomes had to correct him on a couple of plays, but that's going to go away very quickly. And Mahomes made a comment about just how smart Hopkins is. I think you add that to Kelce's football IQ, to Smith's experience, Schuster Smith's experience. You know, Worthy's just got to watch these guys so that we can keep that deep threat, because his speed's unbelievable. But, you know, his field awareness was definitely suffering yesterday as he almost turned around and was running backwards. You know, how do you know where you're at when you're doing that? But he'll improve with that if he sticks with these guys and he watches these guys. He's got a lot he can learn from them.
Yeah, look, you brought up Worthy, and I'm glad to go to Tom and I in the, you know, kind of off the top. He came up, and Tom thinks I'm being too hard on him for being a rookie. And maybe there is PTSD from, you know, Sky Moore and Tony and some of these other young players. But I do think that he should be further along, and I think it's fair. He's a first-round pick. The opportunity has been thrust on him this year, and he's 10th in the league among rookie pass catchers right now in yardage, catches. Like, it just hasn't come as quickly despite the opportunity. Is that fair or is that unfair? I think it's slower than it should be, but I'm not, like, out on the player. I think his upside is tremendous, and I think he'll be really good. I just think it's fair to say you should be further along in this rookie season.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, Jacob. I feel like you want to see improvement every week, and you want to see the biggest mistakes disappear first. And so, you know, I think from a rookie standpoint, they're not feeding him so much that he can't, you know, digest this. And so I feel like they're bringing him along. I just feel like he's got some bad habits that in college speed overcame, you know, and he's got to now realize, okay, I got to get rid of those bad habits and use my speed for speed's sake, not for, you know, compensation of a lack of mechanics. And hopefully, you know, Connor Embry, the wide receivers coach, they'll continue to work with him. But I kind of want to see those incremental changes, and I don't think we're seeing those. So it kind of feels right. I think you're being too hard on him? No. Because the expectations of this league, the man's making $1 million a year plus. So the expectations of this league are what they are. And you have to learn quickly, or you become a Sky Moore, end up relegated to special teams or possibly the practice squad. So, no, I think the expectations for a first rounder should be high.
Especially when we see, you know, the expectation that Rashi Rice set last year. I mean, yeah, that's a hard brunt, but, you know, I think two plays over 20 yards this year. It's just that play at the beginning of the game is what bugged me. Like, you can't miss those opportunities, because that turned into 0 points and we had a game go to overtime.
Right.
And like in, you know, in that game in week 9 of the NFL season, is that big of a deal for the Chiefs this year? Probably not, but it is in the postseason. And, you know, if we don't see that corrected, then that's just one less thing I think they have in the offense. But the good news is apparently DeAndre Hopkins still has that in the tank as well. and so it, I think the pressure's lessened. Defensively, I don't know. Was that their worst defensive game of the year? I think it probably was. It wasn't a ton of yards for Tampa, but the defense didn't make the stops they've been making all year. And look, we're nitpicking. Chiefs are 8-0. But, you know, I thought even in that game, 24 points probably could have been more. What'd you think of the defense last night?
I thought the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a very good plan of letting our aggressiveness work against us. You know, they let us get upfield, sometimes way upfield, and then they just run the ball or throw the ball, you know, to those underneath routes. And they did make adjustments. The one thing I will say about the defense, they had to defend the short field 3 times under 50 yards. That's not easy. Yeah. And then again, in the end of the game, man, you know, third quarter was definitely a leak and chip. But the fourth quarter and overtime, well, they didn't get the field in overtime. But, you know, the end of the game, I felt like they made the stops when they needed to make the stops. Even though they let the Buccaneers score, they forced them to burn a lot of time. But I do think maybe, yes, to your point, the worst performance of the year, probably. Was it a horrible performance? Not necessarily, but Jeff, definitely not kind of up to the snuff that we've seen in these previous games.
Yeah, I mean, it was only 284 yards of offense. I think the short field, to your point, is probably the reason for that. But I also think it's important to point out that Tampa's missing its top two weapons on offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, so just things to pay attention to, only because the rest of the league, Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, joining us, are all trying to get better too. And we see the Lions finally go get the guy everyone thought they would, and Za'Darius Smith, to try and offset the loss of Aiden Hutchinson. There's a lot of people putting them at number one in the power rankings. I totally get it. I understand it. I wouldn't do it, but I get it. They look really good. The Bills are coming right along. I think things are happening, so it is okay to nitpick. The Chiefs, I don't think the Chiefs are ever going to be in any danger, real danger of home field, because they have so many games on the field now.
Yeah.
Right? They have had so many fortunate things happen to this unbeaten start. So as we look at them, I mean, aren't we just tinkering now, thinking about the postseason? Like, aren't we just looking at the little things now and projecting those out to what that looks like in January?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we always talk about the margin of error as we close into the season, where you've really got, what's your lead on another team in your conference, and what do we got to do to get that first seed? Chiefs got off to a great September here, man, a great October. And so they're in a position. Now, I think it's interesting. I think you'll see starting this week, if they beat Denver next week, you'll definitely see it, because at 8-0, 9-0, 10-0, the discussion becomes all about being undefeated. But here's what I can tell you about that. I've never heard anyone on the team talk about that being a goal. So they will rest players, I believe, in weeks 14, 15, 16, 17, if they can. So, and not just rest players. I think it's important to realize that you're not only putting wear and tear on players when you play them each week, but you're exposing them to risk. And the way the Chiefs, I mean, it feels like we're losing a player a week. Jared Wiley out for the season now as well. So I really think that, you know, if you see these guys go 14-0, they're gonna rest the remainder of December and just kind of coast into the playoffs and be in a position where they can make a run for this three-peat. I think that's their goal. I don't think it will shift to an undefeated, despite what fans may want. I think they were just fortunate that right now we sit 8-0.
Good fortune is good fortune. They'll play Buffalo. Rick points out that they're only 2 games up on Buffalo, and I get that, but they play Buffalo. So that becomes, you know, the magnifying glass on that. But, the Chiefs, if you look at the schedule and we're being honest, right, Carolina, Vegas, Cleveland, we'll see what people think about Denver. Denver's, they're better than we thought, but I think their schedule is fortuitous for them to have that home field. So we'll see. What did you think of left tackle last night? Because that's what we're all watching. That's the unsolvable thing. It's going to be these two guys. They're going to have to just be better. What'd you think?
Yeah, you know, I think I said on the air yesterday, you know, are we being too harsh on Wanya Morris? You know, he's got 9 or 10 starts, and we expecting kind of like the question you were just asking about right. Worthy, but yep. I felt like they had a really good performance last night. And you know, the one thing I thought in talking with Coach Reed after the game, he acknowledged that they stopped running the football in the first half and the third quarter. And he said that was a mistake. And in the fourth quarter, they went back to the ground game. Yes, yes, this offensive line is very good at that. And so I feel like, you know, we just need to shift to that run to pass the ball and from pass to run the ball. And I feel it. You know, they do that. They're helping those tackle situations. They're putting those guys in good. And look, let's not overlook, too, some of the guys that Wanya Morris has had to go up against, the Max Crosbys of the league. You know, it's been tough. It's been a, you know, look, it's a gauntlet. It is what it is. This is the NFL. Yeah. And when you're the reigning champion, you get everyone's A game. And so, but I did think they did a great job last night. I felt like, you know, especially it was impressive and rewarding to see them cap off the game, to win the game with a rush right over the middle, 2 yards, doing what you do best. I thought that was kudos to them for pulling it off and getting the victory.
It is, but the, you know, that left tackle, they're going to get most of the time the team's best pass rusher every yes, time they step, especially in the postseason. Speaking of tackle, a right tackle, I'm sure you've seen it now that it appeared that Juwan Taylor got an early start on that play.
Why are we still doing that?
Like, why? Like, come on. Like, yeah. It should have erased a really big play. Like, what are we doing here? I thought we were through that.
You get a little anxious when you're up there and everything's on the line, so to speak. But this is what we hope the month of November and December are, is really the month of November. One of the things I'd point out to you, Jacob, if you look at the start of the season to where we are right now, we're the third least penalized team now. That's impressive. They have eliminated a lot of those penalties.
Yep.
And so if they can continue that effort, improving in November and then December, really settle in, pour cement around everything that they've been working towards, I think it sets them up for an ideal run in the playoffs. I know, look, we're halfway through the season and we're saying the playoffs are a sure deal. The percentages are high at this point, but I think our expectations should be high as well.
Oh, I do too. And the craziest thing about all of this to me, and I just shake my head, is that the Chiefs have not played like dominating football this year by any means. They have had plenty of opportunities to lose games. The fact that they haven't just feels like good fortune as much as anything else. Of course, having Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Andy Reid is the biggest factor in that. But I mean, this is the NFL. Like, the fact that they haven't lost any of these games is wild. And I think what makes me laugh is, you know, by the postseason, they're going to have Pacheco back. Now teams can deal with Pacheco and Kareem Hunt. Good luck.
Good luck with
they're,
that.
They're probably going to get, I mean, I don't know if we have an update on Rashi Rice, but the expectation is always that there's been an opportunity, if not for sure Hollywood Brown. Like, there are reinforcements coming for this team.
Charles Mehu's not back yet either on the defensive side. Mike Dana, they're struggling to get him back on the field. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster, you're right. They're not playing, Chiefs aren't playing full strength, and yet they're finding ways to win football games. And as they get healthier and as these guys start to recover, by the way, scary moment last night with Mahomes, wasn't it? I thought it was interesting. Mahomes said that it settled him down. He said, early in the game, I was bouncing out of the pocket and running right into their passing coverage. And he said, once I hurt my ankle, I didn't have my mobility to rely on. He says, I kind of settled down, stayed in the pocket, and it helped me. I thought that was an interesting observation from the guy who's out there. Not that you want him injured, and that those ankles, man, I hope he can walk later in life, because those ankles have taken a beating. But
the Gumby. It's the Gumby.
Yes, absolutely. Coach said he's got the loosest ankles of anybody he's known. But I feel like you're right. You know, as the Chiefs kind of return to full strength, this thing's only going to get better. It's only going to get more substantial. And that's exactly what needs to happen, because the NFL, we know December and certainly in the playoffs, man, things tick up dramatically. I mean, you can't make the errors that we've made in some of these games and still win. And so they've got to eliminate those. And hopefully when they get some of these guys back, they get stronger and they get more dominant, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that they could get better, but they definitely can. Like, this mm-hmm. team can play better than we've seen it play, and they're 8-0. I think that's what it is for me, and maybe people are just tired of it. But at the same time, they're far from unbeatable. Right? Do you remember when the Patriots went unbeaten in the regular season? That team felt like they were just killing it, and I'd have to go back and look, but it felt like they killed everybody every week.
Yeah,
and just were so much better. It hasn't felt like that for the Chiefs, and won't. You know, I don't think it will either. Like, the margins are razor thin, but it doesn't matter as much anymore because they've jumped out to the 8-0 start.
No, I mean, this was an overtime victory, you know? I mean, right. We didn't sew this thing up in the first half, and I don't think any of these games, they've all been close late in the game, and so maybe one, I think maybe the Saints game wasn't close in the end, but gosh, you know, I mean, when you look at this thing and you look at the one thing I'll say, you know, everybody, we mentioned everybody kind of gives you their A game because they feel like that makes a statement. If you can beat the world champions, well, that's the way the Super Bowl is going to be too, you know, and right now it looks like maybe a Detroit, Kansas City Super Bowl, that is not going to be easy. I don't know how we stack up against the NFC because you don't play them enough. But, man, the Detroit Lions, they looked unbeatable the past couple of weeks. I mean, they trounced a good Vikings team, you know, and last week they looked good as well. And so I think the focus of these Chiefs, where they're really staying week to week, is one of the keys to their success. They're not getting caught up in what, you know, week 16, 17 are going to be yet. And hopefully the pressure, because I've been through this before with the undefeated, man, the pressure starts to stack on you at 8-0, 9-0, 10-0. That's unusually good. You know, a lot of teams can go 5-0. A lot of teams can go 6-0, maybe even 7-0. But 8-0, 9-0, 10-0, 11-0, that's a serious run. And again, not that they're internally talking about being undefeated as any kind of goal for the season. But the reality of it is that pressure's on you. So at some point, they're going to have to figure out how to combat that as well as getting someone's A game.
I haven't thought about it. I mean, I'm not even – and maybe it's because the margins have been so thin. Speaking of, it's a short week now, early window, which the Chiefs rarely get. Denver at home, lot of dangers there, certainly. Denver's – better than we thought. We'll just put it that way. They're better than we thought.
They're better than the record, even, I think, a little bit, you know.
But their defense. It's a dangerous game, short week at home in an early window like that.
I'm glad we have them in Arrowhead. I think Denver's defense is really good. I know last week was kind of an anomaly, kind of the same for us this week with Tampa Bay. But, you know, I would hate to be Bo Nix going up against the Steve Spagnuolo defense, man. I mean, your learning curve is already intense. And I think one of the things that people don't quite, maybe fans don't quite understand about this game, it's a little like when you were in college, you're taking a final exam every week. You were cramming on Tuesday. Then you're studying overnight to go out and kind of walk through it on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then, man, you take the final exam on Sunday. And that happens week after week. Well, week one, week two, week three, you kind of pushing through that. And it's like, wow, this is getting tiring. Week four, week five, week six, you're like, wow, this is exhausting. Week seven, you get my drift. It just doesn't stop. This goes on for 17 weeks in the National Football League. And when you're a young player who hasn't played 17 weeks, who's come from a college, you know, where you don't play 17 full weeks and you don't play 6 months of football. There's just a lot to overcome here. And then you go up against a genius like Steve Spagnuolo and the looks and the pressures he's going to get. I expect a lot out of the defense this week. That's for sure.
Yeah. Vegas does too. Only 41.5 is the number on that. Chiefs are 8-point favorites in that game. We will hear it right here on the Odyssey family over on KNSS as always, Dan. Really appreciate it. 8-0.
Yeah, I'm not giving it back. I know that.
All right. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. Thanks, Dan. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Sounds good.
If you missed any of that, if you joined us late, you can always go back and listen on the Odyssey app. So do that. We're going to come back. Tommy's going to rejoin. We'll get more into KU. We didn't spend a ton of time with KU, and we'll look at K-State starting their basketball season tonight as well. It's all coming for you at Sports Daily. Dalbart and Castor, don't go away.
KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on KFH. Tommy Castor, Jacob Albrecht. If you missed anything from the Dan Israel conversation, you can always go back and listen to it on the free Odyssey app. I missed that interview, Jacob, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to it on the free Odyssey app. I would imagine, coming off of a Monday Night Football walk-off win in a short week ahead, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we talked about it before. You just got to keep your head down and keep going. It's one of the few noon games on a Sunday that we're going to get against the Broncos.
Yeah, it's that's a dangerous game for a thousand reasons, I think. I think everybody. Yeah, look, Dan, we went through it, and he's kind of, I think, with us, just, you know, kind of tinkering, looking what translates to January. You know, they've got a nice lead in the AFC. He brought up that he hasn't heard, and I haven't even really thought about it either, honestly, of an unbeaten season. He doesn't think at this point they really care about that. I mean, we'll see if this drags on. I just don't think it will because of how close some of these margins have been, but who knows down the stretch. I did ask him about Worthy. He said he thinks it's okay to be critical at this point, but not like down on the player or anything like that, but he thinks he should be further along as well. I am interested. You know, he's going to have a big opportunity in the Broncos game, Tommy, because probably if Sertan's healthy, he's going to shadow D-Hop at this point, don't you think? And he's as good in football as there is at that. Maybe this is the chance for Worthy to get out there and show his stuff a little bit. And we'll see. Juju Smith-Schuster, I think there's a chance he could play this week too. So that'll be an interesting matchup. We'll get into all of that later in the week. Let's go back to KU. We talked at Wichita State at length in the first hour. If you missed any of that, Shocker fans, go back and find it on the Odyssey app. We didn't get a chance to really dig in on KU. I think that, look, I loved all the moves they made. To your point, Bill Self attacked the problems that they had last year. Some of those were self-inflicted. Some of those, I think, they just missed on players. They have an abundance of players now. I don't know how much we're going to see Rakese Passmore and Zach Clements factor in, but I think everybody else probably does to a pretty large degree, and that's eight, right? Eight, nine, I think, is very much on the table. A deeper team, maybe. But what's interesting about having a deeper team, Tommy, is you got to think that DeJuan Harris, KJ Adams, and Hunter Dickinson are going to play extended minutes. So if they're, you know, if they are as deep as we think they are, I wonder how that minute share works, right? Because not everybody's going to rotate into just like two spots. It's going to probably mean less minutes for KJ Adams. Probably not Hunter Dickinson. Maybe not DeJuan Harris, but somebody's going to have to give up those minutes if they're going that deep.
I think it's going to be KJ Adams. I mean, out of the three, if you've got to, you know, select somebody to give up minutes,
be more than that.
It'll probably be KJ Adams, and that's not a knock on Adams at
no,
all.
It's no,
just
no,
a
no,
reality,
no.
You know, the situation and having all of that talent. But that's a good problem to have. It's a luxury, I think, you know, to be able to have that depth as opposed to like feeling like they did a year ago,
where you couldn't
take those guys out of the game because the drop off was so severe. I mean, like they were playing Parker Brown. Like Parker Brown got extended minutes in games because they just didn't have anybody else. And you know, Parker ain't his brother Christian. Like, I mean,
it was
the reality of the situation. They
yeah.
didn't have any other choice. You know, they didn't want to have to trot out Nick Timberlake for extended minutes, but they had to. They didn't have a choice. So they've got a luxury now by having the bodies where there's not that severe, at least I don't think so, drop off from starter to bench player, which is nice. But yeah, you do have to figure out the distribution of minutes a little bit. And it could be matchup dependent. It could be, you know, dependent on the opposition. It could also be dependent on in game, you know, what the other team is showing you and what their rotation and lineup looks like. It could be a night by night, you know, kind of situation. So I do think that out of the three, it's probably KJ. I would be interested to know what, you know, and I don't know if we'll see it frequently or hardly at all, but what a rotation looks like that potentially has both Hunter Dickinson and Flory Badunga on the floor at the same time. You know, and how does the spacing work and how are they able to, you know, maneuver both of those guys to make it effective? Or is that something that, you know, more often than not, we're not going to see? So I think that kind of plays into a little bit too. You know, so I mean, it's kind of an abundance of riches. You got to figure out the best way to distribute that out.
I think, look, last year you had an Artario Morris problem. You had a Kevin McCullough injury problem, and you had a Nick Timberlake not being the caliber of player they had hoped, and unfairly being called upon to be more than they hoped, right? It all sort of piled up. But if you think about those three things contributing to the depth issue now, I think so this year for me, I'm like, okay, well, what if three things happen, right? What if three things happen to challenge this depth this year? Would they still be in a better position than they were a year ago? And I think the answer is pretty clearly yes. It's going to be interesting, though, if AJ Store, and not as much Badunga because, you know, because he's young, but Zeke Mayo and Store and Griffin and Coit, they're all going to need minutes. Like, you've got to have those guys in the game. I think KJ Adams is his best version when he is not playing every minute of every game, when he can come on. I honestly think, like, from the athleticism we see from Badunga, he looks right now like he's going to force his way onto the floor. I think you almost just have some combination of two of Badunga, Adams, Dickinson most of the time on the floor together. And that part probably works itself out pretty well. The guard distribution, you know, I guess the question for me is DeJuan Harris, is Bill Self ever taking him off the floor? Because historically, the answer to that is no, like never. Is this year that happens? That's the part that gets really interesting to me. I don't even know what I think about that. But last night wasn't the good indicator because it was against Howard and everybody just sort of played. But how does Harris's role change with some of these other guys? I guess that's my biggest question at this point.
Well, I think the question becomes, you know, who can handle the ball? You know, who's going to be that guy, you know, that can be able to, you know, distribute and facilitate and, you know, all of those things. This guy wasn't a point guard, but the news came down yesterday that Jamari McDowell is going to redshirt this season. Yep. You know, so that does, you know, play into, I think, overall, because you're talking about a guard, and so there's one less guard fighting for those minutes. You know, Shaquille Moore, I think, is somebody that you've got to keep an eye on a little bit, because he didn't play in the game last night due to injury. You know, he's somebody that, you know, potentially could be in that role a little bit, but I don't think he'll be really the main ball handler when Harris is on the bench. You're probably looking at Coit, I would imagine. Like, how good of a ball handler is Coit? And do you feel like, regardless of the offensive prowess, regardless of the way that, you know, these guys shoot the basketball, what do they bring to the table? And is there a drop-off in the way that they're facilitating? Do they turn the ball over too much if they're a ball handler? Because that's one thing that DeJuan Harris, you know, has always been pretty solid at, is, you know, being able to facilitate in a high way without really turning the ball over at a high clip. On the flip side, we also know how much of a value and a premium Bill Self places on defense from his guards, right? And so, you know, that's why, going back a few years, that's why Marcus Garrett, who was never a prolific offensive player, got the playing time he got, because Bill Self trusted him defensively and put the ball in Garrett's hands to be the ball handler, even though he wasn't a guy that could create his own offense and get to the bucket and score at a high clip. That's, you know, one of the things that he values a ton. So if he's got questions about that from any of these reserve guards, as far as not even necessarily their ball handling, but from their defense, then I would suspect that we'll see DeJuan Harris again playing extended minutes and not really getting much time off.
And that's what I would guess too. I would guess he doesn't either. And so that creates now basically we have two spots here, and there's a whole bunch of guys that can fill those two spots. My guess is who's going to play the best defense, right? Like who's going to help it? Because the offense is going to facilitate through Hunter Dickinson. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't know why you wouldn't start there. And I think Bill Self will, when he's had great centers, that's always what he's done. He started there. He started with his centers and sort of worked its way out. And we know they have shooters now on this team. So I think for me, it's like who steps up and becomes the Kevin McCullough caliber defender, right? When he's healthy, obviously. Who steps up and can make this just an unbelievable defense? I think that's probably who we see get the extended minutes out of the other group of what is it, five players that we're talking about here? Because there's a ton of them. It's been quite early on. I did not see that.
Yeah,
coming.
I think it Maybe probably will be. I think that's kind of who, you know, you'll want to lean into that role about, because I don't think that it's Rylan Griffin. I mean, that's an area of his game when he was with Alabama that he was not good at. He was not a good defender.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be him. And he's going to play that wing role, you know. So, like, I don't imagine that he'll be somebody that can lean into that part of his game like Kevin McCullough was able to do. A.J. Storr may be off the bench, but he's, again, more of an offensive weapon coming off the bench. I think it's probably going to be Coit.
I did not see. I hadn't, and this is probably shame on me. You would know this, but I didn't have Coit like penciled in as one of the, you know, regular starting five when this offseason
nobody did
happened.
Nobody
right?
did.
I totally like he
but he
was not
he was the last guy to be added to the roster. You know, so he's only been with the team for a short period of time. But again, it's another, you know, offensive weapon that Bill Self will have. The other thing too, and one player that I know we talked about, but not in this context, when we're talking about who could potentially, step in for DeJuan Harris if Harris has to take time off and sit on the bench or whatever. I mean, look for Zeke Mayo also to be somebody that could just slide over and run the point from the two to the one.
I don't know how much of that he did. Do you remember at South Dakota? I mean, we saw him a couple of times, and now I can't. I mean, what we remember about him is his scoring, obviously. But yeah, I think he can run the point if he needs to.
Yeah.
But it's probably a Dickinson and Harris playing the majority of minutes in a game. I hope they can sort of preserve. You don't worry about this with Harris, but I hope you can sort of keep Dickinson fresh, right, throughout by rotating him out a little bit more early in the year. And I think they will be able to do that to some degree. But as you go into this North Carolina game, and I haven't seen the Tar Heels, I haven't kept up with them a ton. We just know they're always going to be good. I think you feel great if you're a KU fan about the way this is shaping up, even with a loss to Arkansas in the preseason. I just think like roles and what you want to see out of certain players, I think you feel pretty good about it. So they, you know, they beat Howard. We'll get the real test for them this weekend. But all in all, I think, you know, absolutely deserving of the number one team in the nation right now and all that. The depth is going to be tremendous, and it looks like it's going to be a special year. And we hope it is, because guess what that means? It means they play in Wichita in March Madness. And that's what we really want to see happen. Can they be joined perhaps by another team like K-State? Could K-State get a little scheduling advantage? They open their season tonight. We'll talk about the Cats when we return. Let's give away some HTO on the way out. You want to get a free iced tea, sweet or unsweet, featuring the seasonal peach cobbler, or free iced or hot coffee drink featuring the new holiday favorite, peppermint mocha. Those things are flying off the shelves. You can get them at HTO right now by texting the keyword TTEA to the short code 20357. That's T to 20357. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Don't go anywhere. We'll preview the Cats season opener next on Sports Daily.
Their IRS problems.
We have over 1,000 five-star reviews on Google and an A+ with the Better Business Bureau.
You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. End your tax nightmare today by visiting us online at TRA.com or call
800-583-5795. That's 800-583-5795.
Tax relief advocates. Real solutions for real people.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I'm
want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Just saw the Cowboys traded a fourth rounder, Tommy, for Jonathan Mingo.
Good luck to them. That's gonna get them from 3 wins to 4 wins at the end of the season.
That's not even what makes me laugh. I mean, he's a young player, but he's got some upside. But a fourth rounder, that's equivalent to some of the big names, essentially, we've seen traded on the wide receiver market. And they use it to go get Jonathan Mingo. Good job. Good job, Cowboys. It is spiraling out of control. Cowboys fans by the end of the year are going to get what they wanted. They should have just had it 2 years ago. All right. K-State tonight, Tommy. I'm excited about K. I'm not really this game. Like, I'm excited to see them play for the first time, though. I'm excited to take a crack at, to take a swing at how good we think this team might be this year. I love the talent. I think it's underrated. I think their offseason is underrated. And I definitely think they have a chance to be top half of the Big 12, top five if all goes well for them. I really like the collection. And it's not even just the collection. I like how it all fits together, seemingly on paper, right? Like, that's the part for me. If they can get point guard secured and be good at that position, everything else does seem to fit really well together for Jerome Tang.
What I really hope from the Wildcats this year, and I think that with the talent that they've acquired in the offseason and through the portal and everything, is that I hope that they're able to have this collection of talent, win games, and fly a little bit under the radar. Yeah. And because last year was so dramatic, there was just wild swings of positives and negatives and just a roller coaster of emotion. And in a lot of cases, it was because of things that happened off the court that had nothing to do with the games that were actually being played. But there was all of the drama with the president and Jerome Tang and, you know, all these different things that were happening throughout the year and, you know, speculation that Tang was on his way out and was going to go somewhere else. I just want the collection of talent. They landed Coleman Hawkins. That's a prize to get for them through the transfer portal. Brendan Housen, if he can keep up his shooting and, you know, do what he did at Villanova and continue it on at Kansas State, then, you know, they can win. They can compete in the Big 12. And I just want it to be just a calm season for them. That's something that they didn't have a season ago, and that's what they need this year.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I was just going to say, you know, I don't think you'll find it in game one. I just looked. If you can get Housen threes early in the year and it's anything over like two, take them. Because I do think we saw something. That's what he does. And that's why I thought his, and I'm biased to it. He's from my hometown, so I really want him to be awesome. But that's what he is and what he does. And he didn't do it as much at Villanova. When they brought him in, it's such a clear need for the team. And I would just, you know, he took 14 threes in that exhibition game, and Jerome Tang was asked about it, and he was totally fine with it. He was like, yeah, that sounds good to me. Like, so just watch that as a prop early. You're not going to get it tonight. You don't get much tonight on player props until the season goes. But they have a lot of pieces that make a lot of sense together. And, you know, Jerome Tang now has probably the opportunity for the most accurate representation of his chops, right? That first year, everything was perfect, right? Everything was perfect. And then last year, everything sort of fell apart. And this year has felt, like you said, calm, right? He's had a really nice recruiting class. They come in and everything is just like, there's none of the other stuff. So I'm with you on that. Excuse me. I'm really just excited to see them play together. They play tonight. Coverage begins at 6. They're at home. It's New Orleans. You know, we expect them to be really good in the game, but I'm excited for them. I'm excited for Wildcat basketball. Get them back in the tournament.
It's important for them to, you know, really be able to accentuate the stars that they've been able to bring in. And I'll call Coleman Hawkins a star. I mean, he was somebody that was so, you know, it was so important for the Wildcats to land because they needed that playmaker. They needed somebody that could be the guy they get the ball to and can go and create and get a bucket when they need a bucket. And that was really honestly, I think, what the expectation had been all along for a guy like Arthur Kaluma. And it panned out at times, didn't pan out consistently when Kaluma was in a Kansas State jersey. They're expecting that from Coleman Hawkins. And I think that from what we were able to see from Hawkins in his time at Illinois, I think that he can deliver on that more consistently than, you know, maybe some of the other players that had worn a Wildcat jersey over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's a good group. I'm they're going to beat their expectation. I'm making that call. They'll finish. What did they get picked? Seventh, I think. They'll be better than that. Seventh, eighth. They'll be better than that. Will they be top five? I don't know yet. But I do think they're back in the tournament this year. I think that, you know, we'll see it play out tonight. But, you know, we just a fast and furious opening to the college basketball season with two games last night, one tonight. Everybody plays, you know, another game this week. KU doesn't really play a good game, Tommy, until the 14th when they play LSU. I don't know what to make of LSU, but otherwise it's New Orleans and Cleveland State and Mississippi Valley State, and then they get a George Washington. It's going to be a while before they hit the meat of their schedule, and you don't need to in the Big 12, so it's not that big a deal. But, you know, I don't know what we're going to have to sort of stack them up against early on. So hopefully they have a lot of really comfortable, cozy wins, and we can feel really good about it because they should have a bunch of those kinds of wins based on their early schedule. All right, we're going to come back. We'll tell you what else is on the network today. I want to tell you that Crestview Country Club has all kinds of stuff going right now in the fall, including the holidays, Thanksgiving brunches. They've got Thanksgiving meals to take home. Of course, golf, tennis, and all the other good stuff. But give Crestview a call. Ask them about all the different kinds of memberships they have. We appreciate their support of the program, and it never slows down, even when the weather turns cold. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network next.